Good morning, and thanks for joining us on KXEV KLRNW for today's morning conversation. I'm Matt Tritton, welcoming in Ben Raymond, a psychiatric nurse practitioner at Clarinda Regional Health Center since 2019. Ben, thanks so much for coming on with us and joining us here on what has been a nice but warm week here through the Midwest.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Matt. Beautiful sunny day. I love it.
It is. It's been good. And as we dive in, though, today, it's month of May. It's Mental Health Awareness Month, and I feel like it's very easy for us to just kind of hit the edge there and say, hey, it's important to take care of your mental health without actually diving into details of what that means. And so many folks dealing with different things, right, from work stresses to things at home and just anxiety and depression coming at us from different directions. When you hear Mental Health Awareness Month, what does that mean to a professional? How do you kind of characterize what folks need to be looking for and what this means right now?
I think it brings good awareness in the fact that, you know, mental health and physical health are intertwined, and, you know, we still have this kind of stigma when we say physical health. We know it's taking care of our bodies and, you know, going to your annual checkups and eating well and sleeping well. And I think when people think mental health awareness, they go straight to the connotation, this kind of more negative mindset of mental health equals mental illness, which is not the case. I think we need to get away from that. Mental health is health. You know, just like our physical health, sometimes we hurt our ankle and we come out of it 2 days later. Same with mental health. We get stressed. We got some financial stressors. They sometimes resolve and we feel better. And other times they don't. And when they start to cause problems in our family life, in our work life, and how we view ourselves, you know, that's when it's time to take action. So I think this month is a good time for us to bring awareness to, hey, is this really a problem in my life? Is it something I can handle on my own? And a lot of times we can, and sometimes we can't, and that's why there's really good resources available, and this is a good month to talk about those things and get those resources out there for people and let them know that we're here to help.
I kind of like that comparison too, right? If you break your arm, you're going to go see a doctor, get an x-ray, get in cast, yeah, and do what they say, mm-hmm, but all of a sudden you kind of hit a low spot in your life and you kind of bury yourself in a corner and don't want to get out and talk to people. And it's like, hey, I can't go to the doctor for that. I don't want to be judged. Mm-hmm. We mm-hmm have brought it out more, and we have had more discussions, and I feel like it's a little bit more mainstream about, hey, forget the stigma. This is not a big deal. Everybody's dealing with this stuff. Do you think as a society, have we taken steps forward? Have we taken enough steps forward? Like, you've been doing this for a while. How do you balance that?
I think we've made visible strides. I mean, I can definitely see the strides we've made. I would say we're more like mid-marathon than the finish line. In the end, I think we're better about talking about it, whether that's you know, politically or culturally. But awareness isn't the same thing as action. So we can talk about it all we want, but I think we still have a long ways to go. To your point about, you know, isolating, sleeping more, it's not as clear as, okay, I clearly broke my ankle, I'm in pain. A lot of people that are in that, you know, a darker mental state, you just don't always realize right away that this is a problem that's going on. It's slow. It builds slowly. It's not easy to see. It's very gray, and you might think, well, it's because I, you know, got a bad night's sleep, or it's because I had an argument with my spouse. That's why I'm not feeling well. So it's easy, I think, for us to find quick excuses to why maybe we're feeling not mentally as well as we'd like to. And that can just go on and on and on. And I think that's where right now the biggest barrier is just getting us to recognize within ourselves, okay, this is a problem, just like I would go to my primary care to check out my ankle or, you know, some skin rash you have. It's very clear to see that, but mental health is not the same. So I think identifying those signs, we still have a long ways to go. I think we've kind of opened the door, but you know, each year I see some improvement culturally, and that does make a big difference, but I don't think we're quite there yet.
It can be cathartic to get something off your chest, right, and sit down and talk with someone, and especially a professional that's going to, A, you know it's going to be something that's going to be confidential, but then B, someone that can kind of lead you in the right direction. Do you find sometimes the biggest hurdle is just getting someone to sit down and start that conversation? Like, once it goes, all right, they're open and they're in, but it's just getting that first step is the hardest.
Absolutely. I would say, you know, my initial evaluations with patients, the first 10 minutes it's a lot of, and you can tell people are a little bit uncomfortable, but, you know, after 5 or 10 minutes, it just flows really nicely. And I think people realize, like, oh, you know, there are professionals that understand what I'm going through. And you'd be surprised how many times I hear people just apologize, you know, I'm sorry, I feel this way, or I'm sorry. Yeah, does that make any sense? And it's like, yeah, of course it does. These are medical problems. Yes, you're describing generalized anxiety disorder. That's a thing. And many other Americans have it. It's very common. And these are things that we can actually address and give you really good, effective interventions. It's something you might not need long-term, not even necessarily medicine. Here's some other things you can do that are pretty non-invasive to get you some improvement. And I think once patients start seeing some light at the end of the tunnel very quickly, they start to realize, oh, well, why didn't I just come in 3 years ago? I would have saved myself a lot of hassle, would have felt so much better. People forget a lot of these illnesses cause physical problems. Over time, you get this increased stress response, and that just wreaks havoc on every organ in your body. So it's also important for your physical health. But I think, yes, things tend to flow really nicely after you just get to know someone and talking to them like a human being. And that seems to open the door very quickly, and people get pretty drastic improvement if they just make that first appointment, talk about it a little bit, and start to form a plan. You don't always have to talk about your problems at length to get some improvement. Sometimes it's just, hey, what's going on? Here's what we can do. Let's try this. See you in a couple of weeks. And we just go from there.
We're talking with Ben Raymond here, a psychiatric nurse practitioner at Clarinda Regional Health Center up in Clarinda, Iowa, as part of our morning conversation. And Ben, you lead a men's mental health group monthly at Clarinda Regional. How important just is that community setting with peers where, you know, maybe you're not going through the exact same thing as the person next to you, but they get it and they kind of understand where you're sharing what's, plus with that professional kind of leading a conversation too?
Well, it's been really enjoyable. I really liked it. You know, you get guys that come in, and each person has their own story for sure, that their experience is unique to them. But I've been surprised to find that there's just, I guess not surprised, but there's really common denominators within men of this urge to provide and protect their families that causes excessive worries or sleep problems or strategies to address stress that maybe aren't the healthiest. You know, those are really a common denominator. I think a lot of men that come to the group end up sharing and talking about. And I think that's really important because it helps people understand, like, oh, yeah, this is a thing that other men deal with, and here's how I deal with it, here's how you deal with it. And it's not therapy. I don't prescribe medication there. We don't do therapy. It's pretty laid back, talking about how the month gone. We have a theme every month. We ask deep, meaningful questions of each other. There's no forced sharing. It's just a really open-ended kind of group, and it seems to have been pretty successful thus far. So having that sense of community, but I think we've kind of lost that in a lot of ways, and I think rural areas are better about that in some ways than more urban areas. This is one of those kind of interventions that can bring people together and raise that awareness that we need, and just get the ball rolling. A simple conversation that can start off pretty lighthearted and then goes to a more deeper conversation of meaning and purpose and what's important in our lives and having perspective and gratitude, and all those things can make a profound effect on someone.
When you discuss, you know, been losing sleep and staying up and just that sense of, like, I have to provide, mm-hmm. is that something that you see established professionals and folks that have families of, once they're hitting 30 to 35 years old, that's when that kicks in? Or even is it some of, like, hey, I'm in my 20s and I'm trying to get things started. I'm not where I should be at in my life or where my folks expect me to be. Like, is that more of like a later stage sort of thing you see?
Well, that's a good point. So, you know, earlier in life and adolescence, you kind of go to this identity finding stage. Who am I in my life? And that's often very confusing and traumatic for parents and chaotic, which is kind of part of the deal. And then as you get into your early 20s, I think, you know, a lot of parents think, all right, you're 18, you're out of the house. That's oftentimes the most significant growth in someone's life is from 18 to 25, and a person's brain isn't even developed until they're 25. So we're sending our kids out in the world at 18, and maybe cognitively and developmentally they're just not quite there yet. And that age range is a lot of where this sense of, okay, so I kind of figure out who I am, but what do I do with this person I think I am? Where do I go? How do I build purpose in my life? And then you kind of, a lot of people find their way and some people don't. You get into a career, you know, you find a significant other to build a life with, you have a family, and then you hit your early 30s, and if that's accomplished and that that's something you want and do, you have kids, and then you're kind of asking yourself, okay, now what do? I have to provide, and this is my purpose right now, which can be a very good purpose to have, but that oftentimes is either one, very, very overbearing, or two, you don't feel like you're meeting that satisfactory requirement in that life stage, so you start to struggle with that, and I don't think I can provide, I don't think I can do this, I have these financial obligations, I want to provide for my children, and that often is just can be quite excessive, it can be very hard on ourselves, and we learn those things from our parents, you know, how did our dad, how did our father or our mother provide for us when we were kids, was that healthy for me? So we kind of learn these strategies by absorbing them as sponges when we're kids. So you kind of get to this early mid-30s portion where, my purpose is clear, but this is a lot. How do I deal with that? And then as you start to, you know, your kids get older, there's another question. Okay, I've done that part. My children are getting successful. They're finding their way in life. I'm there for them. I'm holding myself accountable. I have responsibilities. Okay, now what? You know, you kind of climb this ladder, and then there can be a bit of a meaning crisis at that stage where, okay, I've been very successful in my life. Now what do I do with my time? And so it's just a constant battle of finding ways to, in the end, maintain fulfillment in one's life, I guess, if you were to sum it up in one sentence. But each answer to that question is usually different based off your stage in life. And that's part of the human condition, is constantly finding what gives me fulfillment in life. Do I have to look very hard for it, or is this something I need to think deeply about? And I think those are the questions we avoid answering as people, because they're really hard questions to answer, and they're supposed to be hard. So when we get up and we work every day, that's an easy, work is not easy, but it's an easy thing to say, well, I'm going to work, that's my purpose today. Once those things maybe become less important as we start to get into retirement, those are bigger questions to ask. Okay, well, what do I do to fill my day to add fulfillment? Is it a garden? Is it chopping wood? Is it, going to my grandkids' graduation, picking up from school? So it's a constant battle, which is hard for some, and takes constant effort and introspection.
It is interesting because you do go throughout life and you say, all right, once I graduate high school, I've reached that point. And, I got to get through college. Once I get that, and yeah, it's just stage after stage, it keeps on building. So you mentioned earlier, it's different in rural areas as opposed to urban areas when you're dealing with mental health, and a little bit more of a community factor still in our rural areas and our small towns around. Is that community aspect helping us to kind of bridge that gap a little bit easier, or is it, are we seeing different factors there in the urban versus rural? How do you see that?
Well, it's double-edged. I think, statistically, the stigma is stronger in rural areas as far as seeking help. That's pretty clear. On the other side of that, I think there is a greater sense of community. So people are able to watch out for one another, and you do know your neighbors in a rural area. I mean, go to a suburb of Omaha, you live 12 feet from someone, but maybe you haven't talked to them in 6 years. That's not uncommon, and that's not good. I mean, there's a difference between being physically lonely and feeling lonely. That's a feeling lonely type of feeling, especially if you don't have many loved ones in your life, or people that you seek support from in an urban area. That can be extremely isolating because you're looking around at all these people, but yet you don't feel a part of the community. And I think that's less common in a rural area. On that same token, because people in rural areas typically know one another more, more on an intimate basis, that can also mean if I go seek help, I'm probably going to know the person I'm seeing maybe, or I might see someone in the lobby that I know, or I know they go see this person. Yeah, that kind of drives that stigma of, everyone kind of knowing each other, which is why obviously confidentiality is so valued here. So it's certainly double-edged. I like the rural component because I'm not sure if I have any data to back this up, but I see a sense of resiliency in rural areas. And it's, I think it's probably been that way for a long time, where people do try to handle problems on their own or with their neighbors, and I really have an immense respect for that. And I think that's something that I personally don't see as much in urban areas, is this self-reliance, you know, on the grocery prices are too high, screw it, I'm just going to, you know, grow my own food. Like, I love that. And I think that mentality is still true for mental health, which is good to a degree, but really not good when there is an actual serious problem that needs addressed, and it's just maybe less likely to be addressed because of this drive for self-reliance.
We talk about community and the benefits of that. Let me throw a bit of a curveball here. With technology, you can connect with anybody around the world, and you can have daily conversations. And do you see the benefits of that side of things, to where we do have this instant messaging going on just like that, but then the flip side too of the negative that comes with what we see on social media and kind of those death scrolls that people end up with Instagram and Facebook on?
Yeah, the doom scrolling. No, I see that a lot. Yeah, I think people are, it seems like professionally, professionals are either on one side or the other. I feel like I'm kind of in the middle. You know, most of these algorithms, a lot of times they do have psychologists that help build them, and in essence, they're just a mirror. The truly what you input in your social media is what it's going to put out to you. I mean, I know if I, going back to a tree cutting analogy, I don't know why I keep going back to that, but if I got a tree to be cut down and I'm YouTubing it, you know, I'm probably going to get a bunch of videos of trees falling on people's heads, which is not, you know, that's just the way it is. It's a mirror. So if we're inputting things that might be negative or consuming or material based, we're going to get that back. So if someone's in a depressed mindset or their self-esteem is very low, I guarantee you their algorithms are aware of that and will send them either things to validate those negative emotions in a bad way, or if you're trying to change things around and you might be looking at, how can I help myself? You're researching you know, things to help depression or medications or you know, community supports, you're going to get that back. That's what's also good about the algorithm. It can certainly output positive things too. I would say with technology in children, that's also heavily a double-edged sword, where studies indicate more than 75 minutes of screen time a day are associated with increased maladaptive behaviors, so maybe like defiance or sleep issues or truancy in school. And those can be really problematic. There's a really good book I like to recommend to really any parent. It's called The Anxious Generation, and it's kind of highlights this post-2010 idea of this decline in self-directed play. When I'm only in my mid-30s, but when I was bored as a kid, you know, we did things to keep ourselves occupied, and boredom is a really good thing. That's where kids build curiosity and ingenuity and creativity. Now that is replaced with this very easy, quick dopamine fix that gets kids easily distracted because they're so stimulated based off this one activity. I mean, imagine if I prescribed a drug where you just looked at your hand for 6 hours a day with nothing in it. That's what a phone is. Just take the phone away. You're just looking at your hand. And the average media consumption for an adolescent is 4 to 5 hours a day. And for adults, it's a little bit less. So that's pretty extreme. I think we can all agree that's probably too much. So this book, The Anxious Generation, is really good guidance on maybe what's a healthy way to use screens. It's not just the content on the screens. It's also the actual screen itself, which is often blue light, so it disrupts your circadian rhythm. So I usually recommend, you know, putting on a blue light blocker on your phone. A lot of, like, iPhones will have that setting, or wear blue light blocking glasses. That can really help the sleep deficits that screens themselves can cause. And of course, the content issue on what kids are being fed. It's not very well regulated, and there's pretty easy ways to find loopholes around those things, and kids are a lot smarter than me at using technology. So those are something I would encourage parents be very, very mindful of, and that's something that can you know, you got a kid that's really well functioning, really good kid, and gets on an app or social media, and things can go downhill very, very quickly because of some more predatory type algorithms that are pretty dangerous. And then you have, you know, I should speak to some of the positives of technology. There's really good apps out there like Calm, Headspace, that are meditation-like apps, and telepsychiatry. So, you know, I can see a patient over the screen if that's what they prefer, especially in rural areas if you have transportation issues or it takes, you know, 40 minutes to get here. If you want to talk to me on a computer, that's fine, as long as I can see you. That's also a positive of technology in this case.
It's good to see there is some of that. All right, there's some good stuff to shine through, but obviously the negative, and who would have thought that, you know, my family vacations when my parents were making me get in the car for 8 hours and we didn't have cell phones, that it was a good thing in the long run, you know?
I know, yeah. You can argue with your brother and you know, get in fights and you work things out, and that's good for conflict resolution. That's not bad. And, you know, and your mom has to turn around and, you know, pinch you on the thigh or something. That's there is actual some benefits to that. I think parents today will, all right, I'll just, you know, stick a phone in front of you, which I understand the logic behind it, but in the end, it's like you're borrowing tomorrow's calmness and using it today, because they're just going to have issues with it eventually.
Find your inner Clark Griswold during the family trips this summer.
Yep. Everyone needs a Clark in their life.
That's right. Last one I want to leave you with, Ben. I appreciate coming on and doing this. And this one might be self-explanatory, and people, I might just be beating a dead horse with this one too. But exercise, just a 30-minute walk, something like that. The benefits of getting out and doing that, and how that obviously physically is good, but how that's going to play a role in the mental health side too.
Yeah, you know, I think we've done a bad job in psychiatry of not encouraging pretty basic interventions like that. You know, there's a huge study in the UK, I think it was over 40,000 participants with mild to moderate depressive symptoms, and they initiated a low-intensity exercise regimen, which was described as about 20 minutes a day, 3 to 5 times a week, was as effective as Prozac. And I really think if there's one thing to take away from this, it's that if you don't want to go see someone, that I get it. Don't want to address your issues in front of someone, I get it. Initiate a low-intensity exercise regimen, and that is an excellent place to start. That is as effective as a medication for mild to moderate depression. Also, generalized anxiety, sleep issues. We know that walking itself can improve sleep. So you don't have to lift weights if you don't want to. And if you don't think you can do 20 minutes, 3 to 5 times a week, start with 5. Whatever you think you can do, do a lot less than that and work your way up. And honestly, I've seen that probably work quicker than some medicines for more mild illnesses. And sometimes that's all you need is just a low intensity exercise. If walking is trouble for you, you know, do some light stretching in your house for 20, 30 minutes or some, you know, grab a friend and go for a jog or use an e-bike or something, whatever it is to get your body moving. Our bodies really need to stay in motion. We're used to that over many years of perfecting our human bodies, and we are meant to be in motion much of the day. And I think that's a big gap in where probably we should be. So it's a great place to start, and it can be an extremely effective intervention.
Ben, I can't thank you enough for coming on and talking with us today, getting us ready, going through the second half of Mental Health Awareness Month here, and it's a lot of great information coming to us today. Thank you so much.
Yep, you bet, Matt. Thanks for having me.
That's Ben Raymond, psychiatric nurse practitioner at Clarinda Regional Health Center, joining us to talk about mental health as we go throughout May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month. I'm Matt Tritton. Thanks for joining us for the Morning Conversation.